Welcome to our online session. And as usual, we will start with about 10 minutes of sharing. And maybe today you might want to share the distribution of your meta candies. Have you distributed some meta candies today or yesterday?
Yes, I was walking in the forest yesterday, and sometimes I take a bag with me to take the rubbish, and often I'm a little bit angry about the people who throw away the things, plastic and handkerchiefs. And yesterday I didn't feel any anger, so I just was thinking, maybe these people, they don't have a connection to nature, or even, yes, they don't think anything. And so it was more kind also for me
Pick up
these things without anger or ill will. So, yes, I think this is meta practice. And it was also funny, also because I did it before you gave this talk, and then you mentioned about the candies. That's a good symbolic. Thank you.
Thank you, Doris.
I'd like to share something.
Please.
Yesterday, I wasn't able to come to this group session, so I listened to it later on, and it just wasn't the same. So my candy today that I'm delivering now is like how wonderful it is to have this group and be with the group and realizing when it's not there that I miss it. So that's what I wanted to share.
Thank you, Judith.
I feel to the whole retreat a sort of Sinterklaas. If I am a sort of Sinterklaas, I throw all my meta, I radiate all my meta to the whole universe. And today I have a guest dog with the same as my Australian Shepherd who passed this year, and she's very smart. Yes. And I took her for a walk, and she was so glad with her walk, so I let her from the leash, and I wished all dogs in the whole universe may you bathe in a sea of love. And then we meet a squirrel, so I meet all the squirrels in the universe. May you bathe in a bath of love and health. And then we meet, of course, nature. So I with all the plants and the forests in all the universes. That's where my candies today.
Thank you, Monique. Somebody else to share their metta candy?
Hello, everybody. I found this idea of metta candy very attractive. And I realized that for some time now, I have been greeting drivers who stopped for me on a crossing, and I nodded their head or, you know, waved to them and kind of thanked them. And today I had an interesting incident that a guy riding a motorcycle, he stopped in the middle of the street. He was looking at me and he said, "You want to cross?" I said, "Yes, but I don't want to disturb you." But he stopped and he smiled and I smiled and we both went our separate ways. So I like this idea of the metta candy, greeting people or thanking them even without knowing them. And it seemed to produce a good effect, I think. Thank you.
Thank you, Leah. Maybe one more person?
There's a daily ritual here. A terrace on which I'm making a garden, and these pigeons and crows land up and they demand food, and if they don't get food they start gnawing at the leaves of the plants, so I have some pigeon feed for them. And I was running out, so today after the morning breakfast candy for the pigeons, I didn't have any left. And then I was up on the roof and walking, doing my walking meditation, and a pigeon came and sat. So I guessed that the pigeon was hungry. And so I came down and then I gave some of the normal rice that I have uncooked and some dal. And then later in the afternoon, a crow was creating a ruckus and threw some things about. So that's what I did again. And then tomorrow I better go and buy some pigeon feed. So that was my metta candy. I didn't step out of the house. Okay. But there's a dog. There's a dog that always barks at me when he looks at me, even when I generate metta. So I haven't turned into St. Francis of Assisi yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Tia. And thank you, everybody, for the sharing for your metta candies. And now I pass on the microphone to Aya Viranyani.
Thank you, Aria. And thank you, all of you, for sharing it. It is metta candy to share in this context, especially for me, because in this situation, it's that much less time I have to say anything to you. So, metta for all beings is such an alive category. And one thing I wanted to add to all that we have had to say already about metta, and in the context of metta for everybody. Just in general, with the metta practice, we tend to focus on the radiating of metta. But just like dana, which is giving, it's generosity, it's also receiving, metta is to be received as well. So not to forget this. This is an avenue of connection with all beings that we don't tend to pay a lot of attention to. So we give metta candies, but we also receive them. And I was thinking about this as you were sharing. It was just like receiving metta candies. And to stay open to that channel of metta that is coming towards us, consciously or not. I mean, the coming towards us consciously or not. But to be very aware of that in our interactions with people around us, in our interactions with the world. Ariya and I had a day out today. We went up to Pyo Luen to, in part, to celebrate our friend Mimi's father's 93rd birthday. So we did some errands, we did some money changing, went to some gardens, we had some lunch. And celebrating each other. It's such a beautiful and very explicit sharing of metta, giving and receiving. So I just wanted to put that out before I started saying what I meant to say today, because it's really, metta is a two-way street. And in receiving the metta of other people, when it's offered to us, whether it be a smile or metta in action or metta speech, receiving that graciously allows the other person to offer their metta, receives what they have radiated out to us. And we all know, a couple of you with your examples, so nice, you know, to be radiating metta and have somebody respond. It really is very touching. So to offer people your responsiveness as an act of metta. And of course, this is bigger than just metta, because metta is one of four Brahma Viharas. And that's more what I wanted to talk about this evening. A little bit, I've spoken already about the relationship of metta and sati. But wanting to talk a little bit tonight about the relationship of metta and the other three Brahma Viharas, to give some context what we're doing. As we've already said, in a number of ways, and both in what we have shared in our talks, but also in answer to some people's questions. So as you know, metta is, of all the four Brahma Viharas, the most general. We radiate metta using a very general kind of well-wishing. I think you, Ariya, used this metaphor of an umbrella. You know, it's the umbrella that covers all bases. So may you be happy, may you be peaceful, may you be at ease, may you be safe. Doesn't say anything about whether the person is happy or whether they're suffering. Whether their life is difficult or easy, it's just a general wish. May you be happy. Metta that inclines to suffering, of course, is compassion. And metta that inclines to the good fortune of others is mudita, empathetic joy. So these additional two forms of metta are quite specific practices in and of themselves. So with metta, we polish and develop and deepen our general capacity for connection. With karuna, we deepen our capacity to connect with suffering. With mudita, we learn and deepen our connection with the good fortune of others. Both karuna and mudita have their own particular challenges. And when we cultivate them specifically, we also find this in grappling with those challenges. The mind comes into a particular kind of balance, which of course is equanimity as a Brahma-vihara. And one thing to remember about each of these Brahma-viharas, just like mindfulness, when we develop one of them, the other three come along. They're essential for each other. So I think of it in terms of zooming in and out. When we cultivate metta, that general cultivation, non-specific cultivation, gives us the basic ability to connect with all kinds of beings in all kinds of ways, going from the specific, from ourselves, to all beings, as we're doing now. When we cultivate compassion, or mudita, we're developing different aspects, different sides of metta. And as we're cultivating metta, for example, a number of you have said, well, compassion is really my doorway in to the difficult person, for example. And yes, we have these spontaneous experiences of compassion coming from out of the background, more into the foreground. Or maybe it's mudita while we're cultivating metta. Metta in the Abhidhamma is described as a beautiful, universal mind state. It's present, as I think I said, in every pure moment of consciousness. Compassion, karuna, and mudita, empathetic joy, these are occasional. Occasional beautiful states. They don't always arise. So sometimes while we're doing the metta, these spring into the foreground. And we don't have to cultivate them specifically to develop them. Each of them has a particular strength. And depending on our personality and our conditioning, one of these will be most suitable for each of us. So metta is said to be ideal as a practice for somebody who has a lot of aversion, just irritability. Because, as you remember, metta, the far enemy of metta, is ill will, aversion. So metta is the polar opposite of that. Karuna, compassion, is said to be ideal for somebody who tends to cruelty. And that word is very harsh in English. And cruelty is somebody who is cruel is somebody who does things to people that are harmful and hurt others just because they enjoy it, or they just because they like to do it. But I would add to that, in terms of the far enemy, which this is, of compassion, to callousness, which in English has a much more resonant flavor to what compassion is the antidote to. So the far enemy of compassion is cruelty or callousness, just not caring that others are suffering. So for somebody who tends to this, we might not be cruel, but we might just not care. So for those of us who have that as a habit, compassion is the ideal practice. And then mudita is the ideal practice for somebody who has a lot of ill will. And that's a particular form of aversion that manifests as resentment or Schadenfreude, wanting bad things to happen to people. It's quite specific. So, the far enemy of mudita being ill will means that karuna as a practice is ideal for somebody for whom this is the habit.
Mudita.
Thank you, Maria. So each of these first three brahmaviharas is the ideal practice for one who tends to abide in its far enemy, whether that be general aversion, whether it be callousness, whether it be ill will. So these are subtle differences, and I think very interesting differences in our experience, because each of us has this tendency with regard to dosa to land in one of these three places. Equanimity as a specific practice supports and strengthens and gives balance to all the others. And as a specific practice, it's ideal for somebody who has a lot of attachment. So the first three brahmaviharas are ideal for those of us who tend to dwell in dosa, one form or another. Somebody who tends to be much more attached needs to cultivate more equanimity. This is a basic difference between equanimity and the other three. And equanimity, as it works, not as a specific practice, but in the background, I haven't said much about that. But equanimity is what gives us the ability to abide with, particularly in terms of mudita and karuna, to abide with and to rest in facing and connecting with suffering in terms of karuna and with the good fortune of others in terms of mudita. So we might not be specifically cultivating it, but it's essential. And somebody mentioned this in the group meetings yesterday, speaking about balance. Balance is essential to the cultivation of metta, karuna, mudita. We can't do without it. And this balance, this upekkha, is what allows us to rest in the middle, to be with the suffering of the world and the joy of the world, and to cultivate metta, karuna, and mudita in the face of those things. In the Zen tradition, they speak of the 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows in the world. The openness of heart that can rest with that depends on upekkha. It gives, in the text it says, it gives compassion, unwavering courage. And I love that. The courage to open to suffering. It gives compassion, fearlessness. And it prevents mudita from going to either too much levity, which is the near enemy, or the far enemy, which is resentment. Just not being able to rest with how people are having good things happen to them. And this is such an interesting state, mudita, because it really, really shines a light on how self-referential our joy can be. So without equanimity, we can't be happy for other people when good things happen to them. We just resent it. It annoys us. So there's some metaphors that are used in the texts for each of these Brahmaviharas that I really like, because they're all connected in a particular way that highlights the unity of these four. So again, just as with the Metta Sutta, it uses the relationship of a mother and a child. So metta,
9 o'clock p.m.
Metta is that state of a mother and an infant, and she just wants that infant to grow and thrive, a very general way. Compassion as a Brahmavihara is that very same mother who has a child who is ill and wants the child to recover. Mudita is that very same mother with a child who is in the prime of their youth and who wants him or her to enjoy the benefits and enjoys seeing them enjoying the benefits of that. And I think this is such a poignant metaphor because it implies, oh yeah, I'm not young anymore, but my kid is, and how wonderful that they can enjoy that. And then Upeka is that very same mother who has a child who has grown and is busy with their own affairs and can just rest back and not be involved, but connect. So these are all kind of in the same ways. It's that same mother with that same child. All of these Brahma Viharas relate to our interaction with the world, suffering or otherwise, happy or otherwise. And so we cultivate metta, but each of these others comes along with. And today we'll continue in the practice with groups. Ariya described a particular way of cultivating metta for different groups of people. And we'd really like to encourage you to be creative with this. There's no wrong way to do this. And there are particular ways that you might find, particularly for yourself, resonate more with you. So finding your own best way in to this, in your own practice. But today I'd like to share another way of radiating metta to different groups of people. So let's rest back. Find a comfortable posture. Sitting on a chair or on the floor, or lying down if you have a bad back and need to rest. And taking a few minutes at the beginning of the sitting to establish the radiation of metta, however it is easiest for you to do that. Whether you're for yourself or any of the other categories we've already been using. In the same way as you've done before, using the same phrase or whatever phrase you find most useful today. Resting back in this flow of metta, resting back in this habit you have been cultivating with so much diligence and sincerity. Letting that flow be easy, simple. Using the phrase whenever you need to and at whatever frequency you need to establish the radiation of metta for a single being. whether yourself or somebody else. And now, beginning to radiate metta for all beings in your immediate vicinity, your space that you're living in, as well as this Zoom space, all beings right around us who we can see, who are visible to us. Everybody here on the screen, you can peek for a moment if you like. All beings in your household that you can see, other people, maybe you have a dog with you, or a cat, or a bird. Maybe there's an ant crawling across your windowsill, or a mosquito buzzing around. All beings here, right around us, that we can see. And now taking as the object of our metta, all beings in our immediate vicinity, either here or otherwise, in your physical spaces, whom we can't see, who are invisible to us, either because we can't detect them with our senses, or because they're just so small we don't see them. Or they might be hidden from us somewhere in our spaces. So beings with bodies, but very, very small that we can't see, or hidden beings in the fine material realm who are just in this space with us, but we can't see them. May these beings be well, happy, and peaceful. All the unseen beings right around us, just allowing that metta to flow out and connect by itself. Not knowing who any of these beings are, but may they be happy anyway. And now, in a more general way, radiating metta in our immediate vicinity for all beings, whether we can see them or not, whether we can be aware of them with our eyes and ears or not. All beings that are near to us physically, and in this Zoom space, May all these beings who are close to us physically be well, happy and peaceful, safe and protected from harm. And now, taking as the object of our metta all those beings, whether visible or invisible, who are far away, further away from us. And right here in our vicinity. Outside in the garden, maybe the birds flying by. Maybe somebody is walking a dog down your street. all those beings we can't see, who are further away. The next town, the next district, the next country, the next continent. All those beings out there who are distant from us, may they all be happy. Just as we and those right around us want to be happy, so may they be happy, whoever they are, wherever they are. Far away beings of all sorts. With bodies, without bodies. All kinds. May they all be well, safe and protected from harm. Peaceful and at ease. Just as when we shine a torchlight in the darkness, the metta goes out and illuminates whoever is out there, near and far, visible and invisible. Simply inclining to all beings are further away, unknowable, but just like us, wanting to be well, happy, and peaceful. And now together, radiating metta for all beings right around us that we can see. All beings near to us who are invisible. All those beings who are further away, who we can see. And all those beings further away, who are invisible. Near and far, visible and invisible. From right around us to the farther edge of the universe. All beings whatsoever. May we all be well, happy, and peaceful. May we all be safe and protected from harm. May we all be healthy and strong. May we all be peaceful and at ease. Continuing in the silence, radiating metta for all beings near and far, and visible and invisible. Without exception, letting the light of metta illuminate all. Using the phrase as you need to stay on track. To keep inclining the heart to this kind, friendly well-wishing for all beings everywhere, without exception. So in the formal practice, in your sitting and walking practice in the next 24 hours, exploring different groups of beings as a way of opening up the practice from the specific to the universal. And there's so many different ways of doing this. And none of them are wrong. They're all correct. So play with this. I used in this last sitting two of the categories in the basic Metta Sutta. The seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, and combining them. You can do that. You can go by way of size, as it does in the Metta Sutta. And then that last category, born or seeking rebirth. So anybody seeking rebirth is not yet attained arahantship. And those of us who are born, all of us who are born, include arahants, those who are fully enlightened. You can use gender.
No.
You can go as it does in one of the paritas, radiating metta for beings with no legs, with two legs, with four legs, with six legs, with many legs. Human beings or non-human beings. You can do so many different things with this. So explore this on your own. Find ways for yourself to expand. And in the open metta practice, in your general activities, this is a huge field of play. So you could take one of those groups, all beings, for example, that you can see. And as you walk down the street, anybody you see, whether it's the cat walking across the sidewalk in front of you, the person going by on their bike. My particular favorite is an airplane full of people way up there somewhere. Or everybody on the bus or the train. All beings you can see. Or you could take the opposite. All beings in your immediate vicinity as you walk down the street that you can't see. And it may be the people behind curtains in their houses, the creatures in the soil, the birds in the trees who are singing but you can't see them, the unseen beings with fine material bodies, all beings we can't see. So whether in your formal sitting and walking or your general activities, really enjoying the creativity of this particular part of the practice. Finding your own groups. Finding groups that work for you. So, with that, I turn us over to Aria, who will take your questions and guide us in the chanting.
So, yes, please. Who has a question? I see Helen.
Hello, everybody. I have a question that's a little bit in line of what we talked about before in the instructions. How do you address the different categories? For me, there would be three possibilities. You know, like, for example, do you say the people in the airplane, or do you say may you? Or if it's like in the house, do I say may we? Because, yeah, especially the we, I think it's somehow, if it's for all living beings, I think it's extra special to say we because of the interconnectedness. But I would really love to hear what you have to say about it.
All right. Thank you, Helen. With the example of the aeroplane, you know, there I would say, may all those beings in the aeroplane be happy and well. May they have a safe flight. Or all people or everybody in the house, let's say. So may all the beings in this house be happy and well. And when I say, may all the beings in this house, you know, I feel myself included. I am also a being in this house. So, you know, for me, I don't need to use the word we, because somehow through the practice, yeah, I've come to see, to understand, to experience that when I say, may all the beings in the house, may all the beings in this village, may all the beings in this world, so I feel myself included. But, you know, for you, experiment and see what feels comfortable, what feels, you know, the most suitable way to come to this, you know, non-discriminating metta, openness, friendliness.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Then Noam, please.
Thank you. Two questions about the four Brahmaviharas. First, is upekkha from metta different than upekkha from vipassana? And is it samadhi, or is it like a component of samadhi? Like, what is the relationship there? And Ayavirunyani talked about, if you have, for instance, if you have resentment, then mudita is better, and different qualities that you should perhaps work on. And I was wondering if they all are working together, then is it better to go for like where you're lacking, or is it better to like where it's more difficult, or is it better to go where it's more easy and to say if metta is easier than to work on the metta, and then the mudita is more flowing, and does it matter? Because that also sounds like a bit of a like an agenda. Like I have, okay, I'm a resentful person, then I should do only mudita, and I have an expectation there out of a specific thing, and is that a good thing to go with practice? Maybe it's many questions at once.
Thank
considerations
you.
I have.
Yes, thank you, Noam. So the first question, upekkha in the context of the Brahmaviharas and upekkha in the context of vipassana meditation. You know, the Brahmaviharas, these are practices which are relational practices. They deal with living beings. So it's our relationship to other people, other living beings. And as Ayavirunyani has pointed out before in the reflections, so the upekkha as a Brahmavihara is this balanced state of mind in regard, you know, to people, which in a way, you know, contains the other three Brahma Viharas, but in the foreground is just this balanced state of mind, the equanimity in regard to living beings. Upekkha, in the context of Vipassana meditation, you know, there we deal with experiences in our body and mind, or whatever we can perceive with our senses, sense doors, sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touching sensations, and then, you know, what comes up in the mind, thoughts and mental images and emotional states and so on. And so there, then the upekkha, you know, is in regard to these experiences in body and mind, the physical experiences and the mental experiences, mental phenomena, physical phenomena. In regard to the second question, as Aya Viradhyani also has pointed out, you know, metta is kind of the basement or the umbrella. So that's why among the four Brahma Viharas, this is the most commonly practiced Brahma Vihara. With this, we make the foundation. It's good. But then, of course, it's also good to do specific Karuna practice or a specific Mudita practice or a specific Upekkha practice. And, you know, based on metta, then, yeah, if you become aware, you know, your tendency, resentful person, for example, you may pick up the mudita practice, you know, to strengthen the sympathetic joy, the gladness, and by strengthening that quality, the opposite, the resentment will become weaker, will recede in the background. But of course, as you have said, don't do it with an agenda, but do it for the sake of strengthening the gladness. So that is Judith.
Sorry. I've been wondering for a while now is why plants are not included in beings. Plants. Why only animal creatures and not plant creatures?
Yes, Judith, that's a question that comes up often. And, you know, at the time of the Buddha, yeah, you know, there were commonly accepted living beings. Nowadays, scientists, you know, they have come up with experiences that plants, they respond to sensory input and that they have a kind of communication between each other. So, you know, you may include plants as well. You know, when we teach what the Buddha has said, that we teach what the Buddha has said and what we can find in the Pali Canon, in the scriptures. And Susan or Stephen, please.
Yes, thank you. Yesterday we took a walk at the beach, and it was low tide. We were down by the water, and there was a flock of shorebirds, long beaks, digging in the sand, and I was sending metta to them. May you be happy. May you be well. And then, of course, it struck me that they were feasting on crabs in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
And I began doing metta for the crabs. And there was instantly this dissonance because may you be happy, may you be well, you're being eaten alive. And it really, it felt suddenly that there was something off about that. And just as there was no person here, just this mind-body process witnessing it, there was just this, the reality of life consuming life process. No bird, no crab, just that consumption, you know, movement of life. And I guess I'm wondering what is one inclining toward when witnessing pain and suffering? Of course, I can't say that the crab is in pain and suffering. I only have my experience. I'm not in, you know, as you were saying about the octopus, I don't know what octopus mind is. I don't know what crab mind is. But in my experience, it's sort of the flip side of the origin story of metta, of the 500 monks in the forest, and may you be free of fear, and they were free of fear, and the story ends happily, and no one dies, and they all become arhats.
Yeah.
Right? And in this version, they'd all be eaten alive by tigers in the forest. How was the practice when we were witnessing life-consuming life?
Yes. Thank you, Stephen. Yeah. You know, this is nature. And it's eaten or being eaten. And so witnessing this, you know, just in this very specific case, bird eating crabs. You know, metta for the bird, having, you know, a good feast. There could be karuna for the crab being eaten. How much the crab is suffering, we don't know. But for sure, the crab is going to die. So this can be difficult, you know, being the mind is torn, you know, am I, you know, for this or for that or whatever it is. So it is in such a case, my mind goes to upekkha, you know, just stating, just realizing and understanding this is the way it is right now. This is nature. You know, I cannot prevent the bird from eating the crab. Well, I could shy it away, but, you know, then I would be taking sides. So in that case, resorting to upekkha, things are as they are, or nature, the law of nature is manifesting itself here. So with this, let's go to a metta chant to finish this online session. And let's do the Metta Sutta in English, which is on page 4. Then let's begin. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great and the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none throw anger or ill will, wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from sense desire, is not born again into this world. So today we have group interviews. Aya Viranyani has group D and group A is with myself. So may we all be able to continue as many metta candies as possible, but also, as Aya Viranyani has pointed out and reminded us, also be able to graciously accept metta candies from others and acknowledge them, be grateful for them, say thank you. See you again very soon or tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.